that opening, sure. And good luck with the edits. So you're not through the film edits yet?
The edits are done. Oh, yeah, it's all post-production stuff now. So color correction, mixing, the sound, getting it mastered, all of that kind of post stuff. So yeah, the editing is put to bed.
Good.
So nice.
That about wraps it up for us. Aaron Yankee, KBOO Program Director, thank you very much for joining us this week on News from the VOO.
Thank you so much.
Good luck with all your projects upcoming. And everybody out there, we will speak to you again next Wednesday.
Thanks.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Up next is Occupy Radio's The Occupant, and then that'll be followed by Hard Knock Radio.
Poetry from the prisoners at the Oregon State Penitentiary.
Hood anthems become multi-million-dollar commercial jingles. But the question is, who's getting paid and who's really getting played? Such a volatile minefield.
In this world of cold concrete and lifeless steel, there is no warmth here, no affection, no touch.
But more than the cacophonous conversation, I crave the pleasure of feeling myself. I need you to keep me sensitive.
Hear the Uhuru Sasa Poetry Share on Prison Pipeline, November 24th at 6:30 p.m.
Triumphantly, won't you help me sing this song of freedom?
Tune in to Between the Covers every Thursday at 11 a.m. to hear interviews with locally and nationally known authors from both fiction and nonfiction. Between the Covers, only on KBOO Portland.
Welcome back once again to Occupy Radio's The Occupant. Today we visit with Francisco Aguirre. He is currently seeking sanctuary in Augustana Lutheran Church here in Portland. KBOO has been covering this story ongoing as it's progressed. We've been with Francisco in Augustana for brief chats. We've been with him when he reported to court in Oregon City and was arrested. He was released approximately 24 hours later, and he has re-sought sanctuary at Augustana Lutheran Church. I caught up with him there recently, and we had a chance to go more in depth into who Francisco is and his thoughts on a variety of issues and why he has garnered so much community support for his efforts over the past nearly 20 years. We're going to go to that interview now.
I'm here again in Augustana Lutheran Church with Francisco Aguirre. Francisco, a lot of our listeners will be familiar with his story. KBOO's been covering it along with a lot of other media, local media, television, and the New York Times article, which has already come out, and talking about Francisco and his situation. And tonight, we want to talk with Francisco about the idea of home and what it means to him. Of course, the theme of The Occupant is home, chosen that name because it implies that is where one lives. And on this show, with this theme, we explore the idea of home and not only what it means in terms of the definition of home and how one comes to find oneself at home, but also the responsibilities that one has when one decides that this is my home. And we were talking before we started recording, and I was kind of just explaining my take on that aspect of home and responsibility and, you know, little things like your neighbor. You expect him to keep his or her home presentable and not leave the yard trashed. And we assume that that is a responsibility of our neighbor, but we also should probably realize that it's also the responsibility of us. If this is our home, we have to take care of it. And Francisco, you've been in Portland for almost 20 years, is that right?
Yes, almost 20 years in Portland.
And tell me about what you think is your responsibility to your home. And I ask that because with the huge outpouring of support that you have from people packing the Augustana Sanctuary for numerous ceremonies and celebrations, all the way to Portland Mayor Charlie Hale's and beyond, a lot of people are backing you in your bid to have sanctuary. And that sort of puts the point on the fact that you've accepted some responsibility for this being your home through your activism and being part of your community. What does it mean to you that this is your home?
Well, it's to me, it means I have more responsibilities with my community, you know. To me, it's telling me that I'm in a position where I have to give more to the people out there, you know, once I'm free. And to me, it's telling that home or responsibilities is not only taking care of my house, but helping my neighbors to taking care of that house. Not just complaining about my neighbor's house, but will be helping to my neighbor to take care of his place. And that's how I feel with all these people, you know, supporting me, doing a lot for me. Like, they helping me to make a house that they helping me to take care of at the same time.
Right, and to turn it into and maintain it as your home. Tell me some of your story, just so our listeners will know the background. You were born in El Salvador, and you were born in 1979. And of course, our listeners will be familiar with at least some of the situation in El Salvador and American imperialism and its involvement in there. Tell me what your experience was in El Salvador that you remember being a child.
Well, first of all, yes, I born on the 79th, and I born in the middle of a war, you know, armed conflict, you know. And automatic get me involved in all those conflict in my country. Not because I choose that I want to be involved in that, not because I choose to have the worst life in the tiny country, you know, but at the same time, beautiful country, El Salvador. As a child, I end up seeing things that it's not comfortable to see it. You see how people die, and you're not able to really help. I can feel, you know, the pain of growing up with no parents or somebody that you can call mom, you can call dad, or ask for help to your parents, you know. Hey, this is what happened to me. Well, what can we do? What can you help me, you know? As a child, you need your parents so they can support you in any situation. They're there to help you. Well, in my case, it was different. I was part of a conflict that I'm still, you know, people who are involved in that, we're still being affected. No matter how many years it's passed already, we're still affected. You know, in our mind, it's something that we can't forget. And it come back anytime when we have difficult situations where it remind us difficulties back in my country.
So some of those same tensions remain?
Oh, well, you can't get rid of those tensions. One thing is that you learn how to control those tensions. It's different than just going away, forget about, you know. And whoever say, no, I forget all the thing, or they go away, that's not true, you know. We always, that's something that we have to carry with us our whole life, knowing that we learn how to manage those tensions, you know.
So you were born in 79 in El Salvador, and tell me what was the situation with your parents and...
I would like to tell that. I can't tell that because it's a story that we're writing, and I can't talk about. We're writing on a story, and I wish I can tell you the whole story right now. But people will know once we write down the story about my life in El Salvador. Yes, I was part of the conflict. You know, trying to have a better life, not only for me, but the whole country, and start the imperialism back there, you know.
So you were raised by your parents?
No, well, I wasn't.
Can you give me any little...
I didn't grow up with my parents. I grew up away from my parents.
Mm-hmm. And when did you... When did you first leave El Salvador?
In 1995, that was first time I immigrated to U.S. I did try, you know, a few times before. I tried to leave the country and go to the nearest country, like Guatemala, like Honduras, Nicaragua, you know, even Costa Rica. But I decided to come back, you know. In my mind, you know, helping people, it's always been there. I grew up with that in my mind, you know, in my heart, that if I can walk and I can see, I can hear, I have two arms, I have to help others, you know. And I can't be doing things only for me or my family. I can't leave. That's not life for me. So I just decide to come back, you know, and just keep going, you know. Along the conflict we used to have there, and working with my community, you know, until we sign peace.
Can you share with us where this idea of having responsibility for your home, where did this come from?
I think it's the way I grew up, you know, with the people that I grew up. They teach me that I always have to be responsible, but not only for my own, with my own things. I have to be responsible for others too, care for others, and not only for me, you know. And I think that's why, you know, I have that, you know, and I really thank those people who teach me, you know, that, because it is true that we have to care for others. It's not only us, you know. There is people who only think for themselves, you know, and they put us aside, and they believe because they have everything. They have the money they need, their own properties, you know, they own all those big corporations. They have the right to do it and think only for themselves, and just keep taking advantage of us, you know. And to me, I don't think so, and I don't believe in that. And I will keep doing what I love to do until God decides to take me away from this world, you know. That's my passion, and that's what I will defend. I live for me, for my family, and for my community, and that's what I work for every day.
Tell us about some of the work that you've done while you've been here in Portland?
Mm-hmm. I've been a human rights promoter, and yes, a lot focusing on immigrants' rights. So what I do, it's just, I don't like to say teach, but I like to say that we learn together how to deal with different law that they impact our communities, you know. How can we defend ourselves from all those abuses from the authorities, you know? And we're not saying that authorities are bad. I think our message is to that we want to change their strategy or their tactics, you know, of communication on actions against immigrants' community, you know, or communities of color. That's our message. That's what we're going for, you know. We understand that police officers, it's their job, you're right. They're trying to find a way of living. But let's not forget something. Yes, a lot of those officers, they are anti-immigrants. They are racist. And that's something that we have to keep in mind, that we always we got to be finding those people, hanging in there and going against our community, and we have to stop them, you know.
You're listening to an extended interview with Francisco Aguirre. He is currently in sanctuary at Augustana Lutheran Church here in Portland, and has been there for just about 2 months now. It's been quite a roller coaster ride for him, and he is continuing to stand strong, and he is also bringing a lot of attention to the immigration issue through his outreach efforts. And we're currently in the middle of a discussion with him about just what he's been up to for the past 20 years or so that has allowed him to receive such a vast outpouring of support from his community. And we are going to go back to that now. Check this out, baby.
But all bigger struggle is, I hope, people to understand the system in U.S., you know, which is a completely different than a system than where we come from, you know. Here, you respect the law, but the law don't respect you either. So how can we live with that, you know? So we learn together how to, you can respect the law, but at the same time, you're pushing forward to make a change of the law that it can work in your favor, not against you. Because any law that it's against our people, it's not good, and we have to get rid of it, or we have to change it.
How would you compare the system here versus the system the other systems that you're familiar with as far as the immigrants that you work with? What would you say is the comparison?
Well, very simple, you know. In our country, those ugly system, the face we see is have a gun, you know, in hand, and there is a lot of blood, and you can see it right away. Here, same system, but different face. You have a really nice suit and a tie. They are bank robbers, you know. They like to steal, like, exactly the way they do it in our country. But they like to use nice suit and tie. And they steal legally. They steal from people. And in our country, we say illegal because they just jump in and take it. Here, they just grab it out of your hand and say, thank you, this is mine. And they don't express that it's stealing, but we are getting tired of the nice way to taking our stuff away from our hands, right from, you know, in front of your eyes. They taking everything from us. And we saying that this is justice and liberty, you know, for all, but I don't think so. It just, freedom for them to take whatever they want from us, use us as merchandise, and do business with us in whatever way they want it, you know.
Tell me some of the specific groups and the projects that you've worked on in your community organizing here in the United States.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I've been doing is I was involved on helping teenagers get out of gangs or helping them to avoid getting involved with gangs. And when I say teenagers, this is not only teenagers because that's involved parents, you know. Because we have to understand that no matter how good we are on giving things to our kids, you know, not spending time with them, just being in an office and just providing money and really nice things so they can be happy, it's not a happiness. It's an issue, and it's damning. It's violence. Damning. It's gangs. Damning. It's killing. You know why? Because those kids, they grow up, you know, on need of love. You know, they don't see much support from their parents. They only see that those parents are bringing stuff, you know, value stuff that at the end it doesn't worth anything. You know. So I've been helping the community, you know, parents with their kid, young fellas, had to be involved in something positive and not be part of a gang. Or how can they get out of gangs, you know? And we've been in a program where we even help to remove their tattoos if they have tattoos. I've been involved on teaching, learning about constitutional rights, you know, in Eugene, here in Portland, L.A., San Francisco. What we do is we started different amendments from the Constitution, you know, and we learn together what that mean so we can learn how to interpret the law, different laws, you know. And we learn together that there is so many laws that they doesn't go according to the Constitution. That means that law is illegal, you know, law that they're implementing. And we learn what the possibilities is to get rid of those laws that they are anti-constitutional laws, you know. I've been part of different other groups, like Saludo is the most recent group that I'm part of it. And
tell us what Saludo is.
Saludo, it's Salvadorians United of Oregon. It's a group of Salvadorians that we decide to get together and organize ourselves and be ready to support any catastrophe in other countries or in this country. How? By fundraising and sending whatever that people will be needed. But especially El Salvador, we want to help. Right now we're thinking on building ecological houses back in El Salvador for the poor people who can afford a house, you know. And there is many groups involved in that project. You know, we just decide to be part of that project that it's already in El Salvador, that they're willing to build those houses. And why we decide? Well, because first of all, it's our people. And as Salvadorians, we want to help our people in our country too. But something that it's called our attention, it's that we're talking about ecological houses, and we're talking about that people will be working, you know, that community will get together and work to build a house, then they will build the other house, you know. It's just a teamwork that we've been doing. Even the local government authorities will get involved, you know, and provide an equipment, so they can be able to build their houses. Same thing in LA. I was involved. We formed another Salvadorian group. and it was similar. We formed a group after a situation in El Salvador with a hurricane. They call it the Hurricane Mitch. You know, after that, we formed a group, and it was to help a community that was very affected by the hurricane. And we analyzed that just giving to the community money, it wasn't something that is, it wasn't helpful at all. We decided to give the tools to produce the money they need, and they can have their house back, you know. So how did we did that? We decided to build, we call back there ladrilleras, where you make bricks, you know. And since there was no water, you know, we got a faucet. That's how they get the water, so they don't have to go and pay for that water to make those bricks. They end up making the bricks. Then each of them, they got their house. They start selling bricks, and they have the business now going on, you know. They sell bricks. They have a job, you know. They have money to provide to their family. That way we don't have to be there all the time finding a way to provide money, you know. It just... We learn together how to do the job, and because one day we can disappear, you know. As a group, we don't stay together forever and ready to help. Either that group can break apart anytime, or we get old, you know, we get tired, many reasons why. So that's why a really good leader, really good community organizer, always think on teaching others so they can learn and be self-sufficient one day.
It's the true wealth of a community is its knowledge and skills.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that leaves a legacy regardless of if the group continues to exist or not. Yeah.
Yes. That's right. That's what it is.
That's very wise. How did you learn that?
You know, the life I lived back in my country, it was all about that. It was all about organizing. And one very important thing is that I learned, you know, all around popular education, you know. That was always when I was learning or they was teaching me something, there was popular education involved, you know.
And by popular education, you don't mean... how much Kim Kardashian and Kanye spent on their wedding. That's not popular education. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, you're right. You know, it's not that the common system that you see all the time. Popular education, we demand obeying. We are teachers and we are students, you know. There is no let's see if I can translate this. There is no professor without students, and there is no student without a professor. You can be a professor in any minute, you know. And I can be the student, or I can be the professor or the teacher in any minute, and you will be coming on a student, you know. Why? Because we all know different things that we share. And we learn from others. But at the school, you will see one person standing up in front of you teaching wrong stories, you know, completely different. They talk with you about heroes, that they destroy your country, not really a heroes, you know. They talk with you, they talk you about a system that the well-rich people create from themselves, and they just want to force you to be part of the system, and that's the way it is. And say, no, in our mind, we decide how it's going to be.
Yeah.
You're listening to Occupy Radio. This is The Occupant. I'm Jimmy Tardy. You've been hearing from Francisco Aguirre. He is currently seeking and in sanctuary at Augustana Lutheran Church, going on roughly 2 months now since he's been there. And in the midst of his stay at Augustana, he is left at least once. And one of those visits was to Oregon City to attend a court date where he was arrested. And then fairly quickly, 24 hours or so, he was released and has returned to Augustana. He's using his time in the spotlight to draw attention to immigration issues. And we'll see what tomorrow holds with the press conference with President Obama. And we've been talking about popular education. After this short musical break, we'll go back to Francisco Aguirre in sanctuary at Augustana Lutheran Church, talking about the concept of popular education versus an educational system. Listening to Occupy Radio, The Occupant. I'm Jimmy Tardy. The music was by De La Garda. That track is called Villa Villa, or Via Via. And now we're going to go back to our interview with Francisco Aguirre in sanctuary at Augustana Lutheran Church, and his thoughts on the idea of popular education versus an educational system.
We want to be able to say, this is what I want, and this is how I want it. You know, that's popular education. Be able to be open to learn from others and be able to teach others.
It sounds as if popular education has a different way of deciding, what are we going to learn today?
Yes, you know, thank you for asking that question, you know, because one thing you see in the really common system is that they decide for you, right? They say, this is what it is, and you just get a piece of paper and you have to learn it because that's what they told you it is, and it got to be like that. in popular education, it's not like that. In popular education, I don't decide. We decide together, you know. We decide together what it's going to be or how it's going to be, you know.
The subject matter.
Yes. We don't impose, you know. We do it together, you know. And we got to do what people agree to do it, you know, not what I agree to do it, you know. That's an amazing system that I hope one day everybody can use it, you know, and not start imposing people to do things that they believe is good for people, but really what they believe in is that it's good for them.
It is tricky sometimes to forget the fact that what's good for me, maybe it's not good for you.
Yes.
And you have to forget mm-hmm. this
yes.
notion that,
yes.
oh, if it's good for me, well, then yes. it's good for you, of course.
Yes.
It's a little bit yes. crazy.
You know, at the school, students, they can do whatever they want. They can't. What happens is you won't graduate, right? Why? Because they have their system and they believe that's how it's going to be. So are they teaching us or are they imposing us? Look how many students, millions, billions of students, they go to school, they spend so much money on education system, they say. Education system. I don't think an education system is it got to be a system where they impose you to do things, you know. They actually forcing you to do things, you know, that they believe is right. And guess what? Yes, you graduate. And what happened after you graduate? You end up owning a lot of money, right? You work and work and work. When you got to pay that money? Or you end up not having a job, right? Why? Because this system that they impose on us is just destroying our life, you know? We can have a better way to deal, and everybody will have a job to do, and everybody will have enough to sustain their family or to sustain themselves. Everybody can be helping each other instead of attacking each other or control each other, you know?
So earlier you were talking about working in gang prevention and that type of thing, and you were talking about the idea of sort of working with the parents to make sure that they sort of grasp this idea that it's not just about the clothes that you put on your child and the video game system and mm-hmm. the shoes and stuff. It's about just spending time with them.
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
Tell me, like, what were some of the reactions that you got from parents when these connections were made? Mm-hmm. What would their response be?
Well, the first reaction I get, you know, just the way they look at me, you know, because I remember that I got to go to a really rich neighborhood, and when I knock at their door, you know, and they see me as strange, you know, the way I dress and the way they dress, they see a big difference. They say, "What do you want?" And I ask, "May I come in?" I present myself, you know. They decide to just talk to me outside.
And forgive me, but were these like specifically Salvadoran families that
no.
you were talking with? Or
no. U.S. families, you
just
know.
Just anybody.
And, you know, I expressed them that I want to talk to them about their kid. And they very nice or easy for them to explain how nicely or well they was treating his son. But one thing that they never talk, you know, it's how much time they are spending with them. Or how much time they take in to listen what it's exactly that teenager are asking for or need, you know. Or what did he like to do? Do you believe that just playing games is something that he's really loved to do or that's he's all about? That's why you buy all those games?
So you would ask him questions
yes.
like that?
Uh-huh.
And how would they respond?
You know, that's what I've been seeing and say that he really loved to play games. So that's what I brought, you know, or buy him a bicycle. And that's it. Yeah. And do you know what he do when he grab his bicycle and go out in a completely strange neighborhood? But now he will really know that neighborhood where he is, who he is, and what he's really doing right now. Say no. Do you know he's part of this gang? Or do you know he hang out with this gang? Oh, no. The first reaction is punish, you know.
So these were kids that you knew were starting to get associated with gangs, yeah. And you would specifically go to their homes, yeah, and talk with their parents.
Okay, mm-hmm. Sorry. I just want to make sure,
yeah,
that we...
And my idea of doing that, it was, you know, find a way to that they can communicate each other, they can understand each other, what their needs are, and so they can, you know, help that young fella, you know, not to find the love that is missing in home, you know, somewhere else, that it's actually, they make them believe that it's a love, but it's not really a love. It's people who they really know, you know, that you are in need of love, and they need you to be part of their gang. So they express much love, but really it's not love, you know. It's just that they taking the time to listen, you know. They mind controls. They listen to that kid, you know. And that's, many times, that's all what those kids need. Few minutes of their parents' life, so they can communicate and they can express what they need, you know. And that will make a big change, you know. And that was my job, you know, with the parents. And with the kids, helping them to find a way to express, you know, what they're feeling, what it's causing them to feel lonely, and what's the consequence of being a part of a gang. Once they grown up and they decide to get out and they find out that it's not a way, you know, to get out. Getting involved, you know, them in things that they will help them to forget about, you know, gangs. Finding a way for them where they can find the love they need that is not only where they thought it is, you know, being part of a gang. There is other places where they can go, other things that they can do where they can feel that people really like them, really love them, they really support them, and not because it's a part of a gang we will judge or punish them, you know. We're willing to help, you know, to them so they can get out of those issues. That was part of my job, being a gang prevention. We don't like jails, you know. We don't like police go and start detaining people. That's not a solution, you know. Really bad habit, you know, of police detaining people because they are part of a gang, thinking that putting you in jail, it will be a solution. No, you're just creating masters of crime in jail. Every time you take somebody in jail, you're giving more tools to learn more things, to just make it a strong about, I want to be in a gang. Because you put me in jail, because you didn't give me opportunity. Now I want to get out of jail and keep doing what I was doing. And now I will gain more power and keep doing what I was doing, you know, because that's the only way they think they can get power. Instead of putting people in jail, our idea is creating jobs, creating things that it will entertain them for their own good, for the good of the community, and not putting them in jail. There's nothing good inside that jail, you know, that it will help those teenagers, you know, get out of gangs.
Talk to me some more about the parents that you would interact with and their reactions, because I'm sure that you met plenty of resistance from, yeah, these parents. Tell me some of those.
A lot of them, they don't want to deal with it. Their expression was, wow, they decide to be there. Well, it's their life. Let them do it. Just they not welcome in our house, you know. if they decide to get out of the gangs, they have to prove that they are completely not involved with gangs. And I will think and see if they can come back home. Really, really, you see that reaction where it's, wow, it's your son. It's your daughter. How can you be giving those answers? You know, I can see right away why those kids ran away from home. You know, then there is other really important part that there is women, you know, that they grow up their kids alone. The father either they divorce. You see a lot here in U.S. that they that father got deported, or the father is in jail, or the father and mother are part of a gang. You know, and that make it harder, but not impossible. You know, one thing is that if a teenager coming from a family where there is only one of the parents raising that kid, and especially if it's the mother, and there is more brothers, it's really easy, you know, that when we are in around 15 to 17, we start thinking, oh, my mom or my dad doesn't like me, doesn't like me. When we see that our mom or dad, it's just given a little bit of more time of that younger, you know, brother or sister, and we got jealous. And as a parents, we have so many things to do, because I'm a single mother, for example. Oh, I'm a single father. I just have to run. I just have to go and do this so quick, and I forget that my son is asking me for a time, you know, to spend. Domestic violence. Kids run away from their home, you know.
You're listening to Francisco Aguirre in conversation with me. I'm Jimmy, and this is Occupy Radio, and we were visiting at Augustana Lutheran Church, where Francisco has sought sanctuary for, I think, a little over a month now in his effort to receive his U visa and stay with his family here in the United States, here in Portland, where he has been a significant part of his community in a variety of ways, which we've had a chance to hear him talk about. We're going to go back to that interview and finish it up in just a moment, give Francisco a chance to talk about some of his success stories in his efforts to be a beneficial part of his community wherever he may call home.
We've only got a little time left. Thank you for your time today. And one of the things that we haven't touched on with this effort, which I think is a very important effort, and if the gang intervention and prevention work was the only thing that you'd been doing, I think this is very worthy in that, just that alone. Mm-hmm. Although there's a lot of other stuff that you're involved with, but this is about the home. This is exactly about the home. The home environment of these young people drives them away. It doesn't satisfy their needs, and so they go and get these needs satisfied somewhere else. And you know, we've spent some time talking about mm-hmm. just this process that you go through with approaching the parents and the resistance that they put up. Tell me about some of the success stories that you've had, and especially how does it change their thinking, what you've mm-hmm. seen?
Wow. Successful stories that I get 10 communities, you know, and we decide to call communities. Parents got together. Parents decide to act. Parents decide to get organized and help their kids and their community. And each group, we name it, you know. Each group have a name. Each group was on the street, wearing a green T-shirt, ready to report any activity, ready to when they see a teenager walking around with another gang, they're going confront them. Hey, do your mom know where you at? Walk with me, you know. We decide to work together. We was able to get in touch with police and us stop detaining people. Be around to support us, not to incarcerate us.
And what was their response to that?
It was hard, but they commit not to detain people, you know. You will see police running with lights on all the time in the area. Then you will see a police patrol park in a parking lot or in a strategic space. But that it was empty. There was no police inside. There was a helicopter sometime driving by. And you will start seeing it that little by little, so many fathers and mothers was on the street. We work on fixing the street. We asked the city to work on our street because even that, it was something that they wasn't interesting. And we end up with really nice streets. We end up, gangs go away in the area. We end up having 8, 10 communities well organized and working with together to have a better living in their area and their homes. And being part of a well-organized, you know, area in East LA.
And so, essentially, what you're talking about here is you somehow convinced these parents that they had this responsibility, yes. And you effectively got them to buy into this idea. What things would they say when they were going through this problem? Would they be ashamed about how they were before? Or what?
They make a big change because at the beginning they was completely again. And me, all my suggestion, all what I was up to, it was something that they was against, you know. But then they make a big step for good, you know. They decide to give a minute to listen, you know. And when they take that time, they understand that it was something good that they have to try it. And they try it, and it's something that they see that it worked.
And what would they say afterward?
They were so thankful and for the job that we was doing it. They said, "How can we never see this option up there? You know, how can we just stay in our house and think only work and right. not finding other ways to?"
Why do you think that was the case? Why do you think they didn't see it?
Well, part it can be, like I said before, this system, you know, that system in not only in U.S. but in most of the countries, but more in U.S. it just eat you really easy, and that's for poor communities, you know, where parents have to work a lot to be able to provide to their family and they don't spend time with their kids. But for the people who, rich people, you know, who have all what they need, it's all about imagination. It's all about a world that doesn't really exist, you know. It's a fake world that they create around their kids. All artificial things, it's not a love. It's not understand. And very few of the that side decide to be part of it, of the well-organized community, you know. They most of them agree to ask police not to detain people, but they most of them they decide not to be part of the organization.
Wearing the green shirts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then the middle class community, the really poor community, they decide to wear the green t-shirt and be part of the solution for a better future for their kids, you know. And a lot of, you will see a lot of gangs that they even express you, I feel so weird. Why? Because the clothes I'm wearing, I feel so weird that the member of the community give me a hug and say that he loved me and he's here to support me.
That's, even though they were gangsters.
Yeah. That's really amazing to see that, you know. They take the time to express you, hey, this is how I feel being part of a gang. And you cry with them, you know, because you understand all those reasons why they end up being part of a gang, you know. And they just screaming, you know, from inside, but we can't hear. They're asking us to help them because they do want to get out of the gangs. They're not there because they want to stay there. They want to get out of the gangs, you know. But there's no option for them, you know. They don't see that option. The system, it doesn't create any option for them, you know. We just punish them. And we know that there is a lot of options, but we're not showing them that options, you know. We're not showing them that they are part of us. And they are, even though that they are doing things that we don't agree, but why we don't help them to get out of that cycle, you know, that cycle that I just drain them. Go take them more deep and deep and deep into things that we don't appreciate, but that's not mean we have to punish them. That mean we have to find a way to help them, to support them, so they can one day they can say thank you to my community. They teach me the right way, you know, and they didn't punish me. That helping people finding their way out is the best we can do, you know. It's the best we can do, but. One day you will suffer. You will feel pain in your heart if you help to punish the people, but you didn't extend a hand to help. Just you in your mind was only punish the people for what they did. You know, yeah. If they steal, you know, a fruit from your garden, you know. I don't call that a steal if somebody's hungry, you know. But we right away think that person steal a mango from my tree. Why he steal a mango from the tree? Why he didn't ask? I will punish him, you know. Well, that mango, did it really belong to me? It's not because I planted, it's mine, you know. I didn't create it. You know, so why I will punish? Did I really gonna eat it? All those mangoes from the tree? No, a lot of those mangoes get waste. Why I will punish people from taking a mango? You know, why instead of punish, I just go out, pick a basket of mango and give it to them? You know, it's really simple to share, really simple to respect each other. And take that time to understand each other. And we can have a better life. Every time we go to bed, we can go to bed with peace. We can face people, you know, and say, I feel so wonderful because I'm doing the right thing for my community. But how can those people who just create laws that they just punish people stand in front of our community and say, I'm so proud of creating this law because that lie will put you in jail? They won't do it, right? Why? I know they don't feel comfortable doing it because they know that our people don't like that. They know that it's something not good for our community. So what happened is they always hiding, wearing the suit and tie in front of all their co-workers, but they can't cross that line, you know, because they know that they are in an artificial world where they live in. But that glass, it can break anytime, you know, and our people can gain control of their life, and they won't be able to force us to do what they think is best for us. We will be deciding one day.
This is Occupy Radio, and the show tonight, The Occupant, visits with Francisco Aguirre in Sanctuary at Augustana Lutheran Church here in Portland. We'd love to hear from you. You can send us feedback at opdxradio@gmail.com. I'm Jimmy Tardy again. This is Occupy Radio's The Occupant. Thank you for listening. Music tonight has been by De La Garda.
KBOO the first Friday of each month at 9 a.m. for APA Compass. APA Compass is a monthly forum for dialogue, exploration, and dissemination of issues permitted to Asian Pacific American communities. That's the first Friday of the month at 9 a.m. on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
That's right, this is KBOO Portland. Up next, Hard Knock Radio.